Beautiful. Thank you. Absolutely beautiful. What a fun way to start the morning. Good morning. My husband's trying to hide in the dark so I won't embarrass him. Ha ha, saw you. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, Mrs. Hugh Rice, sometimes. I'm so happy to be here. It's a beautiful day. I'm so enjoying really appreciating what a wonderful life it is. And so many things have been happening in great beauty and order and excitement here at the center yesterday, Friday night, and all day Saturday. Your leadership sat in this amazing retreat that was presented by Reverend Clyde and our platform assistant today, the amazing Sue Witter, who is a valuable part of the ecclesiastical staff here, and just really well done. We really did. I had the talk all written, and I went home, and the talk sort of transformed itself into something more because I was so fed by everything your leadership team did together. And I think what we did the best was this some kind of crazy connection that only happens when you give yourself that gift of sitting together. So I'm so grateful to each of you who participated in it. It may have been one of the best ones we've done. It's a little hard for me to know. I usually do more presenting, and I got to really enjoy myself, and I'm so grateful to all of you. So the title of my message this morning is Time-Released Truth. Doesn't that sound interesting? I got so excited. I was so proud of myself when I thought of that as a title for a message. And I thought, ooh, I can go in all kinds of directions about that because, you know, it's a good thing we only get truth in little increments. We could be so overwhelmed, otherwise we might explode or something. And so I took some dedicated time this week to sort of marinating in the possibility of what we would be talking about this morning. And so you got time and you got truth. And then I had a good giggle because I thought those two words do not even fit together. It is an unusual pairing of words, especially when we look at them from a spiritual perspective. But when I put release in the middle of those two words, a little surrender in the middle of those two words, it now gives me a whole different realm of possibility for what we're going to speak to this morning. And so I would start by saying, I love that idea that truth comes to us incrementally, and I think that's the only way we could manage it. I have a few quotes I'll share with you in the as we progress more into the meat of the message, but I noticed while I was preparing the talk that we've been talking about truth a lot. I mean, maybe we talk about it every Sunday. It's church. It's a spiritual center. We come together to be inspired and to remember truth in a beautiful spiritual way. But the more I thought about defining it, I thought, but we just did that like 2 weeks ago. I gave a very complete message. And so what I realized was you are already experts on what truth is. So I want you to tell me in a word or two, we're going to lift the burden off the minister. And in a word or two, I'd like to hear what your idea of truth is. So who? Say it again. Honesty. Oh, that I hadn't even looked at it this week in that terms. Good job.
Changeless.
Love.
Kindness.
Opportunity. That wouldn't have shown up on my list either. That's great.
Harmony.
Grace. Who said grace? Own it, baby. Grace is a hot topic, right? I see people getting nervous. I'm walking towards the back. Passion.
Compassion.
Oh, compassion. Absolutely. Compassion. Peace. Beautiful. And somebody over here.
All that is
and what?
Surrender.
Wonderful. I thought you said forever, and I was thinking forever is a really good word for truth, because there's this line in the Course in Miracles that says, the only aspect of truth that is eternal is now. Well, you know what? That's not what it says. It's time. But isn't that interesting? I'm talking about both. So that quote is apparently still applicable. The only aspect of time that is eternal is now. So it's the present moment. And I think that it's a really good tie-in to see that we can only have an experience of truth in all those ways our experts have defined this morning, in the moment that is the present moment, in the now. So I have a little story I want to tell you that turned out to be quite an amusing experience for me. My favorite definition of truth comes from the Course in Miracles. And as many of you know, I studied the Course in Miracles before I found the science of mind teaching. It actually brought me to this teaching. I don't know that I could have come here through any other route, because we all are individualized in the way we get our incremental pieces of truth that carry us to the best next place to be. And so I started my study of the Course in Miracles by taking that book with me on a year-long spiritual pilgrimage, and it was the only book I carried everywhere I traveled. So Hugh and I had stationary homes in Bangkok, we had a place in Bangkok, and we had a place in Jakarta, Indonesia, but meanwhile we had to travel all over the region, because the company that sent us on this great adventure, mine was a spiritual pilgrimage, his was a work adventure. It was very luxurious for me to be able to go, and the company paid for me to have all this great spiritual deepening. And the only book I carried with me, no matter where I traveled in that region of Southeast Asia, was The Course in Miracles. And so I read it, and I read it, and I had a lot of alone time with it, which I would say in my normal life would not have happened. So I had a lot of time to just read and contemplate and meditate and pray, and then go out into these sacred temples and experience amazing things. And at the end of that time period, when I came back to the States, the small study group for A Course in Miracles that I was hoping to attend when I got home had disbanded. They weren't meeting anymore. And so I set out on this great trek to find me a new study group, because now I studied alone all this year. Now I want to find a group, and I want to talk about some of this stuff with other people. And it became very clear to me that I had been called to create a group. And so I did. I was a little apprehensive about it, and I certainly never thought of myself as an expert till now. Now I sort of do think I'm an expert in it. But what I'll tell you is that the group I started by merely hanging a flyer in a store window, the group I started lasted for 11 years. I stepped away after 11 years, and the group continued. In that 11 years, I read that book cover to cover 4 times. I read it 4 times, but I can impress you even more, because I'm a crazy kind of kooky girl. This will prove it if you didn't already know it or believe it. I one time challenged myself. I was away for the month of August all alone, and I challenged myself to read it in 1 week, and I did it. That meant I had to wake up and read. I read till late into the night. I carried it while I stirred the soup and did everything else. And I read that book. That meant I had to read 100 pages a day of The Course in Miracles. And that also meant I couldn't take a lot of notes, and I didn't have a lot of time to ponder it like I had done in all my other reading experiences. It was a gorgeous, gorgeous opportunity, and I'm so grateful. And of course, if you know me, you know part of doing something that silly is just so I can tell you you later that I did it. You know, I once read Emerson's essay on nature in the White Tanks, and I read his essay on politics at the courthouse, and the essay on art at the Art Museum. I love to be able to say I did those things. Isn't it fun? Some of you have heard me say it many times because I like to say it so well. Anyhow, in the Course of Miracles, it says this, and I looked it up to be accurate because I quote it all the time off the top of my head, but you know how you paraphrase through the years, and then it turns out things aren't quite the way you thought they were. So I looked it up, and the actual term, the definition for truth from A Course in Miracles says this, so beautiful. Truth cannot be described. It cannot be explained. It can only be experienced. The truth must dawn upon you of itself. Wow! How much do I love that? Well, here's the reason I told you that story about how many times I've read it and all of that stuff. I remember that that quote is found on page 150 of the Course in Miracles textbook. And so when I went to verify it, to put it into this talk so I could give you it in the full context, I opened up to page 150, and there in my own handwriting in red ink at the bottom of the page, I had written this. I drew this card 3 times, 3 weeks in a row. Now, what I mean by I drew a card was that the way we finished those 11 years of facilitating that class, I always ended it by passing around this little basket of cards with quotations from the Course in Miracles. So, first week, I draw this card, and it says that I just read to you. The truth will dawn upon you of itself. And I thought, whoa, I am so not ready to understand that. I was a fairly new student. Threw it back in the basket. Okay, I'll recycle it. Next week, we come back. We pass the basket all the way around. It's my turn to draw. Guess what I drew out of the basket? The card. Third, throw it back in the basket. The third week, I drew the card again, and I took it home with me and said, my dear, perhaps you should look at this. But here's the part that really tickled me. This is where God's sense of humor comes in. I had dated it. I drew the first card on April 7th, the second card on April 14th, and the third card on April 21st. Isn't that amazing? I'm so glad I looked it up to tell you, because there's a reason we need to be looking at this thought today, the week before Easter. And so when I look at the definition of truth as it can't be described, it can't be explained, it can only be experienced, it will dawn upon you of yourself. Do you know what Holmes said? Here's a quote from Ernest Holmes. This was actually the theme quote I used to inspire me in the writing of this message. Holmes said, "We wait only for our awakened thought." We wait only for the awakened thought, because the truth is going to dawn upon you of itself. And praise God, it only comes in tiny increments, or we would be overwhelmed. We would go crazy. I think that's why artists often visit insanity, you know, the great writers and poets and musicians and artists, they sometimes had that experience in the realm of insanity, because they take that glimpse of truth that you're feeling, that you're sensing. You could, some people use that word channeling, and then they try and reflect it in a piece of work, in a piece of art or music, or we try and write about it. And what happens? If it gets too big, it overwhelms us. And so we have to get it in increments. Emily Dickinson, my favorite female poet. Emily Dickinson said, "The truth must dazzle gradually, or every man be blind." There's something important here for us to understand that a glimpse of truth is probably all we can handle at any given time, and yet we are given the whole truth. But in our humanity, we can only see a piece of it, and we get to choose what that is, because when we are ready, it will be right in front of us, and we will be able to try it on and figure out what it is. But we can't, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, or we probably should shy away from that temptation to think we know the whole truth because we've had an experience of a glimpse of it. There's always more. There's always more because life is expanding all the time. Life is expanding and our ability to experience life is growing and growing and expanding. Always bigger. It never shrinks. It's always getting bigger. And therefore, when we attempt to teach spiritual principle and we attempt to describe something like a mental equivalence, creating in your mind an image of what you want and stretching your mind so that it will be big enough, your consciousness will be big enough to receive it, we get tangled up in the words. Because you can only have that experience. But what we hope is that the words will make you so curious that you will expose yourself to the possibilities. I was thinking in terms of that idea of expansiveness, that there's a way that for me it feels like my mind is stretching, you know, when there's something new. It almost tickles me sometimes in certain parts of my head, like, oh, I can feel that. Your consciousness is growing because you're trying on a new idea, because you're willing to explore a new what if. What if there is another way of looking at this? And I began to think about the way things have to expand sort of properly, because if you try and force something open too fast, it'll bust. You know, it's kind of like keeping the, reminds me of raising kids, and you try and keep your kids away from trouble, you know, and then they leave the nest, and it's like that, all that time you've been doing this, then it goes boing, and then they fly all over the place, right? So we want to do it in a... we want to do it in God's time. Sometimes we use that expression. Again, a great misnomer, but in God's time. In other words, sometimes from our human perspective, we try and rush things and make them look a certain way or fit into a certain idea, a shape or an idea, and we're really keeping it smaller than it needs to be. That really the potential is so much bigger and things so much greater are possible. I never dreamed I would have a passport. I never imagined we would have the income to live abroad. I never dreamed I would spend a year of my life visiting temples and different faiths and having these experiences of dealing with these sacred ruins from time before time that I can't even imagine. But we get out of our own way, and something else happens. I remember one of my first girlfriends in this spiritual path said to me, "Do you have a passport?" And I said, "Oh, no, I've never needed a passport." And she said, "You need to get one. You get yourself a passport, you're going to travel." And my life changed on that advice. You know, I saw something new. I now could imagine that there are greater possibilities for me than I can imagine. But I opened myself to be able to receive them. And then my husband had to go to work to make my dream come true. But it was pretty nice experience for him, too. So, you know, childbirth. I'm an advocate for natural childbirth, and I gave birth to my babies at home, and I dabbled in midwifery for years because I was a childbirth educator. And so I did that as a young woman. I started doing that in the 70s. And what I want to say is, as I look at birth, I understand that there is some work. There's some labor involved, there's some stretching involved, and new life is always, the birth of new life is always a little bit messy. And it's a wonderful metaphor for life, for giving birth to our new creations in works of art in our own lives, or projects, relationships, whatever that might be. And I want to tell you that in the 70s, we were all just a bunch of hippies just trying to do the right thing. And I probably would have lived with that lady in the bus out in Tennessee somewhere had I lived over in that region of life, because I loved all of this. This was the most earthy thing I ever got involved in, and I just loved it. And it seemed easy to me and natural. And we were, of course, into all kinds of natural techniques and herbs and reflexology and things way before it was popular to do that. If it is, it's kind of popular in certain circles now, let's say that. I don't know that it's worldwide accepted. But what I know is that we discovered, because we dabbled in all those herbs because we could, we studied and we figured out which herbs you could take that would make your labor shorter and less painful. Well, who doesn't want that, right? But over time and with excellent guidance, we learned that a shorter, faster birth is not necessarily the healthiest birth. Interesting. We must pay attention to these things. What we learned was that when they started doing studies on babies that were born cesarean section without any labor, the mother doesn't labor, they set the date, they get the baby out. Those babies that did not have that experience of being in the womb with a contracting uterus, massaging it for hours, when they were born, they found that those babies that did not have the experience of labor were more likely to have respiratory problems. Because that massaging, that natural massaging of that, the whole body of that child trying to come into that world, is a way that they are readying their lungs to breathe, because they have never breathed air before. So it's vital. And faster and shorter births were more likely to have higher risks. And so I thought about that. I just was thinking about this morning, that when the process of birth is artificially stimulated in any way, so, you have your, sometimes they induce labor. Oftentimes, depending on what time of day it is and where the doctor or the delivery person is, they will stimulate the labor to speed things up according to the watch of whoever's watching the watch and whoever's convenience that is. I don't have any unhealed stuff over that at all. Or bias. But so whenever the process of birth is artificially stimulated in any way, there's more risk. There's just more risk. That's why you can to this day look at the statistics of those smaller countries where they give birth at home naturally, and they always have the lowest mortality rate for their infants. In this country, we have a very high. We have a worse mortality rate for infant survival than some third world countries. That's a sad thing. Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't intend to say any of that. But what I wanted to say was, in a natural environment, what we notice about birth, and here, I don't care if you're a man or a woman, or you gave birth or you've never gave birth, or you don't care. In a natural environment, birth is a waiting game. Birth is a waiting game. Remember the pictures of the dad pacing in the waiting room? You know, I mean, we don't get to choose. We don't even know what starts labor. But we know that eventually what's in there needs to get out. There comes a point where everybody's happier. So what I was thinking is, that's a beautiful metaphor for life. Whenever we're trying to give birth to something new, and let's just say you're practicing some spiritual principles in some area of your life and you're not feeling satisfied, I just want to say to you, stay with it. It's not that this stuff doesn't work. It's that sometimes we get the information in such a way that we can embody it in increments. I get a little today and I'm going to have a little more tomorrow, and it is absolutely guaranteed I'll have more the next day, and so will you. So for me, time, if I look at time as a gift, now, this idea of time-released truth, it's like the little bits of truth we get here and there are like a gift. And I was thinking about how, Reverend Cheryl, you made me think of this when you did that, an illustration you can show everybody later, but or on the 5th. Maybe you should do it on the 5th. But I was thinking about how it's like God plays peekaboo with us. God plays peekaboo with us. Whoops, here I am. Ooh, peekaboo. Doop, here I am. I love to play peekaboo with babies. Oh, I love to play peekaboo with babies. I play peekaboo with strange babies in the grocery store. If the mom's not looking, I will play, and I'll meet the kid wherever they're at. I'll get a sense for how sociable they're feeling, right? So you get a little shy baby, then you act a little shy like this. So the baby's over here, and I just act a little shy, and then I'll go very quietly so the mom doesn't know I'm doing it. Right? And then they almost always smile. Then all I have to do is repeat the behavior. And then you got a game going. Right? And that's how it feels to get a little piece of truth, you know? It's like, woo! It's exciting. But you know what happens if I get too excited and I go, peek-a-boo? Well, they startle and they cry. And I would say that if we get too much truth at any given time, we are going to startle. We may cry. We may run the other way. And we certainly will not name that our truth. We will name that something evil that tried to scare us. And we'll tell a whole story about it because we're so good at that. And then there's one more thing I wanted to talk about. Well, maybe two more things, but this one thing I'm going to mention now is that experience we have with time. We have such a strange relationship with time. Right? Right? I heard that. We have such a strange relationship with time that many of us do our not enough work around time. Right? I always say, money, not an issue for me. I know how to use spiritual principle around money. Time, not so much. I seem to have, I think I get a little high on that last minute rush of having to get something done. You know, I think there's a little piece of that in it. But when we have a perception that there is not enough time for whatever reason, but you know, you got a date on a calendar, you got something due, you have something you have to attend. And when you get in that place of feeling pressured by that, it can feel a little scary. It can feel burdensome. And certainly it can feel really uncomfortable. And we do that well. And I notice that when I do that, and I try and use spiritual principle, if I notice it, now I can bring a skill to it. I realize that it feels uncomfortable because I have made it against me. See, and life is not against us in any way. If there is no place that God is not, then even in that illusion or perception of time, no matter how short or long it feels, God is right there. That never changes. And so if you notice that sometimes even the ticking of a clock can be annoying, notice that. Just notice that. Why? And you don't have to answer the why. Just notice that, well, that's interesting. The ticking of that clock is really bothering me right now. How am I relating to this perception of, and what does that represent to me? You know, I have a very distinct memory of when my mother was making her transition. We had her at home, at her home, and the family gathered there, and it was like her last week. And she had this gorgeous clock that was a gift, one of those globe clocks that has sort of the gold spinning stuff inside of it. And my mother was in the hospital bed in the living room, and the clock was on top of the television set, and my father couldn't bear the sound of that clock. And so he took that clock apart, and he disconnected some of the workings of it so that it wouldn't be in his face. So notice that now the meaning of the sound of that ticking clock was that something was coming to an end, that he didn't want to come to an end. So we attach meaning to things. And that's a rather extreme example, but I notice that I battle the calendar, I battle the watch, I battle the, you know, the fact that the first thing I look at when I turn on my phone, it's got this big reminder of what time it is. You know, those are all issues that I'm continually working on in my own personal life. And so in order to change that idea of the annoyance of a ticking clock that feels like a countdown, I play a game with myself. And instead of hearing tick, 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 I realize that I'm only hearing ticking because I am no longer in the divine flow of life where there is no time and there is no ticking. So instead, I hear it as a heartbeat. Thump, thump. Thump, thump. Thump, thump. In God, in this great essence of what we know as eternality, the heartbeat is a sign of life. And life supports me. Thump, thump. Life sustains me. Truth is not against me, and it can never run out. Because we are given an inexhaustible supply of truth, of everything we need to sustain our well-being. And it's ever and ever coming. And so I think of it, it's like, it's kind of stretchy. I'm going to go back to that word stretch, but it's stretchy. It's bendable. It's shapeable. And it's waiting for me to direct it. I am not governed by it. So when I change my relationship with time, you know what happens when you change your relationship with time? First of all, you'll really get your truth when you need it. But secondly, you are practicing the spiritual law of abundance. There is no greater demonstration of the way the law of prosperity works in spirituality than when we are able to apply it in our lives that are more than money, that's more than stuff. So pay attention. And I say pay attention because you probably have a well-established relationship with time already, and you may want to look at it. You may have not realized you can change your relationship with time. So if I go back to standing in that premise that in God there is no time, although God is in time because it's not absent, but for God there's no clock ticking because there's that eternality, because there is no place where God is not, so past, present, future doesn't matter. It can't be measured. Time can be measured. God cannot. When we find ourselves in a situation where time doesn't feel friendly, I was thinking that, you know, look at how much, and this is just my opinion, so you know it's worth a lot because it's always a jubilant opinion, it's not just little. In my opinion, I think we abuse time. We could be arrested for how much we abuse time. We procrastinate, we wait till the last minute, we worry over time constantly, we argue about our use of it with each other, we blame things on time or the clock, we use it as an excuse so that we don't have to do things or we get out of things because we run out of it, because of course we believe there's not enough, and some of us even manipulate it, right? So we manipulate it. But here's what I know in my own life If I don't take time to eat, my body doesn't function well. And I get moody. If I don't use my time to be very present with the people that I love the most, then I miss some precious moments. And if I don't create empty space in my day to just sit still, I won't. Time is a gift. Time is a gorgeous way we can manage our incremental gifts of truth that come to us. And I think that it's very sweet that God loves us so much that that essence of our experience of time and of truth is dealt, at least truth, is dealt to us in these sweet little packages that we can imagine. Don't treat your life like a James Bond movie. Gosh, I've seen more of those than I ever thought I would. You know, in James Bond, there's always that bomb that's going to explode at the last minute. You know, it's always the end of the world. And that's kind of how it feels when we abuse time. And there's this ticking. And of course, in the James Bond movies, the day is always saved at the last minute. But maybe that's a realistic life we live. We just don't give credit where credit is due. Did you ever notice that no matter what, when you run out of time, life still goes on, right? The project just doesn't quite look maybe like you thought it would had you only had a little more time. But if you had a little more time, you now are in that danger place, like the artist that just doesn't know when to stop. And then you have that experience of explosive truth that you can't put into words or art or music. And it indeed is a good illustration of insanity. Time released truth, a beautiful gift from God. Emerson, one of my most favorite Ralph Waldo Emerson quotes, says that the years teach much which the days never know. Right? You put it all together, you got something. Don't miss what that something is. The good news about time-released truth is that it will come again, and it will come again, and it will come again and again and again, because there is never an end to it. How much good can you take is up to you. Your next awakened thought is waiting for you. I think we should pray on these ideas. And so just get comfortable in your seat. At this time, I'd like to ask all of the ministers and the practitioners to please stand and surround the room. We just set aside all of the busy words, knowing they are but symbols of symbols, twice removed from that which we desire to say. And instead, we open ourselves to truth. There is a presence, a mighty presence, right here in this sanctuary. At the core of every living being, every winged creature in the sky, every blade of grass, every planet in its orbit, life. And so as I recognize that God indeed is right here, as I recognize that we sit and we stand and surround this room knowing that there is something magnificent unfolding. It is truth. And it is our privilege to reach out and capture that gem of truth that is ours and to hold it close and to bless it and to thank God for it. And yet to know that between time and between truth, there is this opportunity to release, to let go and surrender, to know that that mighty presence of God is ever expanding, that our awareness of the infinite wisdom of all of life is growing, to realize yet again that there is no limit to the amount of joy we can experience in this life, and that no ticking of any clock can take away those real things. And so right now we breathe and we realize it is sometimes those hard contractions of life pressing in around us that is the exact stimulation to breathe again. It is the very exercise of life that keeps us fit and in shape and smart about our choices. And so in this moment, I speak that word that absolutely assures we are opening, we are stretching our minds to be more open than ever before, that our hearts are softened and tender and receptive to the love that is all around us, and we become this great, compassionate entity. The soul of this very community is born of such things. We are love. We are truth. We are beauty. We are joy. We are the perfect order of the universe in this exact moment, being exactly in the place where we are designed to be. And therefore, the good that we bring is multiplied. It is amplified. It is moving in every direction in great ripples. Truth is moving from this room and touching souls, even as they drive by without even knowing what's going on in here. We lift our heads and we walk in the glory of the divine because we understand we are created in that image for that very purpose. And so I know that whatever it is that ails us, whatever things are weighing on our shoulders in such worrisome fashion, even if it's just because we love our loved ones so much and we want their life to be better, we give it to God, we surrender, we release that, knowing that here too is God, here too is the full infinite wisdom of the universe, loving, supporting, sustaining, guiding, and directing. And so in this collective remembrance, in this beautiful way, we open ourselves to allow the truth to dawn upon us of itself. We are richly blessed. We are blessed. This community is blessed. It reflects not only on the inside of this building, but on the reshaping and the reimagining of the outside of this building so that we draw to us every soul that can be healed here, that can be loved here, that can bring their wisdom, that we can grow, that we can be relevant as a place that honors all paths. And so for this, I'm deeply, deeply grateful. I'm so grateful. Say thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, Infinite Spirit, for all of these rememberings and all the truth that will come in the right-sized increment at the perfect time. And I release these words into that law that always says yes. And together we say, and so it is.